And I still remember the very powerful emotional feeling of when I first approached the shrine and I was standing on this long gravel walkway with these huge towering cedar trees all around me. And it was an incredibly spiritual experience for me. And it just was home.
Welcome back to Religion to Reality, the podcast about living an integrated life. I'm your host, Dave Plisky, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, Father John Gribowich. In this season, we are listening to people from across the spectrum of religions. The last episode featured Nikki Singh, who gave us an overview of Sikhism and what it's all about. And it was really fascinating to see just the overlap with Christianity and what we could learn from, you know, these faith traditions that maybe some of us don't know too much about. In this episode, we're going to focus on Shinto. Shinto is the traditional religion of Japan, and we're going to speak to not one but two Shinto priests today. So I'm very excited about this episode. To begin with, we'll speak with Reverend Ann Evans, who is not just a Shinto priest in Victoria, Canada, but also a forest bathing guide. And we'll talk all about what that is and what it means for people from all different traditions. It's great. Today, we're joined by Ann Evans. Ann is a Shinto priest and ANFT certified forest therapy guide. She is an author and spiritual teacher whose works explore the relationship between humans, spirituality, and nature. Ann is the founder and director of the Matsuri Foundation of Canada, which operates Shinmei Spiritual Center in British Columbia, Canada. The center is a branch shrine of Tsubaki Grand Shrine in Mie Prefecture, Japan, which is one of the most important shrines in the Shinto tradition with a history spanning more than 2,000 years. Ann has been instrumental in establishing one of the few Shinto shrines in North America, bringing the teachings, ceremonies, and values of Shinto to a Western audience. As an ANFT certified forest therapy guide, Ann has trained in the practice of forest bathing, guiding participants into deeper awareness, presence, and connection with the natural world. Her work integrates the principles of forest therapy with Shinto's ancient reverence for living in harmony with great nature. Ann is also the author of Shinto Norito, a book of prayers, an English language collection that introduces readers to the spiritual depth of Shinto prayer and ritual practice. Through ceremonies, lectures, and immersive experiences in nature, Ann encourages others to experience the sacred in everyday life through gratitude, reverence, and a meaningful relationship with great nature. Ann, thank you so much for being on the show and joining us, and also for being indoors on Zoom when you could be out in nature in this beautiful weather.
Thank you, Dave. Although I've got nature right out my window here, so I'm okay.
Good to know. Good to see. Awesome. So we often like to begin by just hearing your story. Now, I'd love to hear, as much as you'd like to share of your upbringing and everything that kind of led you to becoming Shinto and just would love to hear about you.
Okay. Well, I grew up in the Los Angeles area for starters, and
whereabouts, by the way, I'm also from that area.
Pasadena.
Oh, okay. I'm from Ventura County originally.
Okay, a little bit north of you,
mm-hmm.
And so that's where I spent my years through high school. I grew up in a pretty traditional family. We went to Sunday church. I grew up in the Presbyterian church. And I always had a curiosity about religion and spirituality, and not quite sure where that came from because it was not prevalent in my family, but it was something I was always interested in. I had my first exposure to Eastern religions was when I was in college. I'd had a exchange student live with us for a year from Japan when I was in high school. And then I went over and spent time with her family in Japan. And I went to, we went to a number of shrines, of course, as when you're touring Japan, that's what you do. But attended a couple of ceremonies, which I was just deeply moved by. And I didn't understand the religion. No one had explained it to me, but just the whole ritual was very moving to me. And that was something that I just kind of kept with me for many years and didn't come back to revisit that until much later in my life. So that's, I guess, the first kernels for me. In the 80s, I was then kind of reintroduced to Shinto with somebody who was a priest in the state of Washington. And he suggested that I go to Japan and visit Tsubaki Grand Shrine, which I did. And I still remember the very powerful emotional feeling of when I first approached the shrine and I was standing on this long gravel walkway with these huge towering cedar trees all around me. And it was an incredibly spiritual experience for me. And it just was home. And so that's the path I went down from there, of continuing to learn more about it and being invited to become a priest, which is just a deeper experience of the spiritual journey. And yeah, that's how it all kind of developed.
Hmm. And in that development, did you find your, was you talk about a deepening of your spirituality. Was there a change as well? I mean, did you find that you needed to leave your kind of Christian heritage behind, or were they somehow held together? I'm just curious, you know, how you thought about that.
How do I put that in relationship to my Christian heritage? I think throughout my experience of my Christian heritage, I was always asking myself this question of, you know, do I believe this? And, you know, is this truth? I was always in this question mode. And, well, if it's in the Bible, then it must be so. And for me, the experience of Shinto was just this kind of aha, it just is. So as I come further to understand Shinto, because that was my initial reaction, was just, this just felt right. In Shinto, we don't declare beliefs, and there's no dogma or sacred scripture. So it's very much a personal experience, and it's all about living in the now of what this moment is, and about, I'll go into this later, but about purification. So there's not this challenge to say, is this set of beliefs right or not? Because there is no written set of beliefs. So it just, in Shinto, we don't become Shinto. You don't get converted to Shinto. It's like Shinto just exists, it just is. And if you are participating in that tradition and that faith practice, then you are at that moment doing Shinto. But you can then also go do Buddhism or Christianity or whatever other, you know, First Nations religions, religious practices. So it's not exclusionary in any way. And that just felt much more open to me.
Hmm. This is probably a good segue into just you know, having you tell our listeners about Shinto in general,
because
this
is what is Shinto?
Yes. Yeah, I think if someone hasn't spent significant time in Japan, it's likely that they are pretty unfamiliar. So I'd love for you to give us kind of an overview, as much as you. Yeah.
So Shinto is literally the way of the kami. The kanji, the Japanese writing for the word kami, which is what we call the spiritual beings, the deities, can be pronounced either shin or kami. It's the same word. So shin to is a path or road. It's literally the way of the kami. So we deem that the kami are present all around us, throughout nature. Also, there are specific kami that we may install in shrines, like the kami of the sun, kami of the earth, and various other kami. But this spirituality and this sacred is everywhere. It's throughout nature. So we also deem that we as humans are descendants or children of the Kami. And as such, we are innately pure and innately bright. And as we go through our days and our lives, we acquire impurities. So all of the Shinto rituals and prayers and practices are all about sweeping away the impurities, the blockages, to return to our innate bright self. So that's really Shinto in a nutshell, is always returning to this purified state of what your authentic self is, kind of what your grounded self is. And in that we experience gratitude and brightness and positivity, and it's just a very uplifting outlook on life and on the moment. So in many ways, Shinto is about the way that we live and what our kind of what our daily process is. So it's very much integrated into what we do from day to day.
So give us a little more example of what the practice looks like. How do you get to that center? How do you get to that grounding? How do you get to that purification?
So we do a number of, I guess, rituals, if you will, about for purification and ceremonies. One of the practices that we do is called a misogi, which is cold water purification. And this is done in waterfalls, rivers, ocean. And there's a whole ritual we do on the beach and prayers and whatnot. And then we immerse ourselves in the cold water while we're chanting.
Yeah.
And this is a process of purification through prayer while we're doing it. It's the literal washing of the body in the water. And the cold creates a very much an intensification of your spiritual energy. So if you, by contrast, if you think of yourself sitting on a warm rock in the sun and you kind of spread your arms out and your energy is kind of going out, when you're in cold, everything condenses, right? The energy comes in. And so it very much does that. And so people report just feeling very, I guess, spiritually renewed, refreshed, doing that. And our prayers and rituals will have the same kind of reflection of that. We have of asking to remove, you know, we ask for the deities, for the Kami to remove these negative things and whatnot. So we're always trying to put our viewpoint in one of gratitude and positivity. And that kind of automatically opens up the door to let these things go and to return to a renewed state.
I'm always fascinated by how religions get introduced into totally different contexts from the ones that they were originally found or founded in. And when I think about Shinto, it's so deeply Japanese, right? And what I mean is, when you talk about kami, even a Japanese who doesn't spend any time at shrines or really think about religion, let's say, would immediately know what you mean. That's just part of the culture, right? Even if it comes from Shinto, or at least the understanding of it comes from Shinto, it's just innate. It's kind of innate in the culture, and it's so central to the tradition. And so I'm curious I'm curious.
Does that translate culturally?
Yeah, my understanding is you spent like 25 years studying at this shrine in Japan. Is that right?
Well, I've been affiliated with them that long. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And I just wonder if maybe it's easier to kind of talk about nature in the West.
Well,
maybe
I think,
first. I don't know.
Well,
sorry, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Not necessarily. And part of it is translation of words. So, for example, if I'm talking in particular, if I'm talking to children, I'll say, you know, to explain kami to them, I don't want to get into all these esoteric terms. And I'll say, well, do you understand angels? Because angels are kind of this spiritual thing that's out there, right? And they'll go, well, yeah, I believe in angels. I say, well, okay, kami are very similar. Or sometimes people, Western people in the West will say, well, I'm not really sure about this thing of having multiple spiritual beings. Well, you have lots of saints. You know, you pray to different saints. And so even in Christianity, there is the whole notion of having all these different spiritual entities, with even though there's the context of having one God, kind of one main spiritual entity at the top, right? Mm. So it's a little bit of loosening up your understanding of Western language that there's really more overlap than you think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even the ritual that you talked about with the
Masogi.
The Masogi. Yeah. I mean, it sounds very baptismal, right? Almost like in that sense of, like, you know, purifying and allowing what is true to emerge. Usually when I talk about baptism with parents, I'm like, I don't think baptism is really adding something to the person as much as just allowing what is really within to manifest its fullness, because it's like you're taking away and washing away maybe even your own projections on the other person. Like everything's being kind of taken away on both sides of the person themselves, and also whatever we project onto a person. You know, that's a little bit of a different context of what I'm trying to say, but I do relate with this whole notion of ritual as having a very important part for us as human beings.
Well, it's very archetypal, if you want to, you know, put in the context of Carl Jung and a lot of Joseph Campbell's writings, and you'll find these similar things that happen. I mean, for example, in there's all kinds of purification things that the Christian church does. If you're doing the incense, you know, as you're walking down the aisle and they're swinging the incense thing, you know, that's a purification. You're purifying the center. And I think too, the feeling of spirit, if you go into a church or a cathedral, you know, sometimes there's this just incredible spiritual presence that you just feel. You can feel it with your body, with your inner self. And so in Shinto, we're sensing that same thing, whether it's in a shrine, whether it is in a forest, whether it is on a mountain peak. It's being open to sensing that spiritual presence that exists.
Is that the motivation for it? Because you mentioned how kind of individualistic Shinto can be, the practice of Shinto can be. So is that sort of the motivation for someone to go to a shrine, is to just be sort of more immersed, if for lack of a better term, in the spiritual, or you know, what happens at the shrine?
Yes, and I think that's true of going to church. You're going, whether you're going to a temple or church or a shrine, you're going there to experience kind of a more direct connection with the spiritual entity you are seeking or connecting to. It's sort of, it's an opening of yourself, and then you go into this spiritual sanctuary, and so there's this kind of a corridor, if you will, that spirit can connect with your inner self. I think that's true in all you know, all spiritual, all faith practices.
So can you tell us more about kind of life at the shrine? You live at your shrine, I assume. Is that right?
Nearby.
Nearby. Okay.
Think of it as a rectory, just like
Yeah,
a priest,
right.
any priest would. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, life at a shrine is kind of taking care of the shrine itself and taking care of the kami. So we put out offerings on a daily basis for the kami-sama. So on the altar we'll have traditionally offerings of rice and water and sake and salt, which are kind of the basic sustenance, considered to be basic sustenance of life. And for a festival, we'll have more food offerings, fish and vegetables and fruit and whatnot. We do daily prayers. We call it Johai, which is morning prayer, to the kami, and on a regular basis, then praying also for our members and for their health and welfare and happiness. So it's keeping that the sanctuary sacred and alive, if you will. So that would be just kind of the basics here. And then I have people who come for what we call Gokto, which is so for a special prayer requests, and we do ceremonies for that, from everything from praying for return of health, success in business, for relationships, and prayer requests can be for anything. We also do, baby blessings, weddings, ceremonies that recognize certain ages in children and adults as they're growing up. A lot of rituals that go on. And then we have seasonal rituals as well. Next month, or I guess it's this month, the end of this month, we'll have the great purification of mid-year. We do two kind of significant purification ceremonies each year. And so that's a lot of people will come for that as well.
I hate to put you on the spot, but I'd love to hear a prayer. Is there a short prayer you might be able to share with us?
Ah,
Hmm.
sure. Harai no Kotoba is the prayer of purification, and this is commonly used before a ceremony to purify the participants and or the items that are being used in the ceremony. And I'll do it in chant it in Japanese and then read the English for you.
Great.
Kakema kumo kashikoki izanagi no okami tsukushi no himuka no tachibana no odo no wa hagiharani misogi harai tamaishi toki ni naremaseru haraido no kami tachi Moro moro no maga goto tsumi kegari aramu oba. Harai tamai, kiyome tamai, tomo sukoto no o. Kikoshi mese to, kashi komi mo maosu. And the English translation would be, humbly, I approach the kami in prayer. Our great ancestral kami, Izanagi no Okami, performed misogi at Agihara of Odo, Tachibana of Himuka, in Tsukushi of the ancient land, where his very being was cleansed by many great kami of purification. I humbly beseech the kami to cleanse me of all impurities within myself, in my relationships with others, and between myself and the way of great nature. Hear these modest words. Humbly, reverently, I speak this prayer.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, really beautiful. That's really moving. I was just thinking about like how much of like Japanese culture, of course, language, did you have to learn in order to just practice the religion? Like, how much of that did you immerse yourself in?
Well, of course, you learn to read the kanji that is used in prayer and whatnot, because there it's recited that way. But for people coming into Shinto, obviously we don't expect them all to learn Japanese. That's not realistic. And so we write the prayers in what we call Romaji. So they're written in Roman letters, what we would read. So it's so they can, you know, read it easily. And we leave the prayers in Japanese because for a couple of reasons. One is concept of Kotodama, which is that the sound has, that the word itself has a soul, has a spirit, and so that the sound becomes sacred. And a lot of times also there's, you know, a real problem with trying to translate the words. It doesn't have the same, we you know, aren't going to necessarily have the same, the words in English that have the same meaning as in Japanese. So you don't want to lessen that in that impact.
Sure. Yeah. Was it a challenge for you as you were learning how to chant in Japanese, and what was the learning curve like?
Yes, a challenge, but I found it very exciting and interesting. You know, it's interesting as well.
Yeah.
I'm sort of a puzzle person. I like puzzles, and I find figuring out the kanji and things a lot of times is like figuring out puzzles. And when you get it, it's like, oh, it's very exciting.
Yeah. And how much of like Shinto is understood to be meant for cultures and all time and all space? Like, was there a certain way that it was kind of promulgated initially? Like, was it meant to just be something as a for this culture and society at the time? Or were there, like, say, so to speak, evangelists of it moving outside of Japan? Like, how did that whole work out?
Yeah, no evangelism here. That really doesn't go on. So Shinto is the original spiritual practice of the Japanese. It just evolved, mm-hmm. you know, in a natural way. So it's been around for a very long time. The ancient Shinto we would call Kō Shinto, which was just performed in the forest, in the middle of nature. No shrines or whatnot. And then that kind of evolved into what we would call shrine Shinto, which can involve shrines and has a little bit wider definition of kami and what are kami. There's not much Shinto outside of Japan. So Yukitaka Yamamoto, who is the chief priest, who he's has now passed, but it was his vision to Tsubaki to introduce Shinto to the Western world, and not to convince people to follow it, but as more of a cultural exchange, if you will. And in 1987, he started Tsubaki Grand Shrine of America in Stockton, California, and that was kind of the first introduction to North America of Shinto, well, definitely since World War II. And as so, if people come and are moved by Shinto and want to follow and understand it, then we embrace that and teach them and whatnot. But there's no sense of trying to convert people or say, you know, this is my path's better than your path. Thing.
Sure. Yeah. And it seems to just provide a way to maybe help everyone deepen their own path in some ways, or their own tradition, if it's held that way, from the way
yes.
that I understand it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps explain why Buddhism expanded, you know, relatively quickly around Japan when it arrived there, even though Shinto, my understanding is Shinto was already there, but it's compatible, right? It's able to be held kind of together. Do many people who, you know, visit your shrine, do they have backgrounds in other faith traditions? Does this come up at all? You know, do you have any exchange with Buddhism at all? I'm just curious how that works.
We do have people who come who also practice Buddhism. We have people come from Christian backgrounds, from kind of non-believer backgrounds, from kind of all directions, if you will. And again, Shinto just exists, and so you can step into that circle and step out of it or not. You're not having to, you know, declare yourself as Shinto specifically.
Yeah. In the Western world, I feel like if anyone has much exposure to Shinto, it might be through things like Miyazaki films or something like that, right? Where the kami are always coming up, Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, whatever people are familiar with.
Yes.
Are those fair depictions of kami? I mean, obviously they're doing something in the service of the narrative of the film, but can we learn about it through these kinds of popular media, are there any kind of misunderstood aspects that you feel like would be helpful to clarify?
I'm not sure specifically. Certainly there's a lot of people in the anime world who are, you know, interested in Shinto and whatnot from an anime perspective. And I don't have a lot of experience in that. I'm a big fan of Totoro and the Ghibli films.
Yeah.
But and there is something to those of, you know, spirituality in the forest and you know, all the cute little creatures in the mm-hmm. forest and whatnot.
Kodama. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you'll see, you know, little torii. You'll see, you know, symbols that go on in the anime. But Shinto really is more, it's very experiential because we don't have this, there's no, you know, sacred text I can present to you and say, here's the belief and here's what you should do and here are the rules. That doesn't exist.
Right.
And so really you experience Shinto first, and then as you have experiences, you come to understand it more deeply. Versus I think a lot of faiths, you come in the opposite direction. You study the teachings and the beliefs and you gain the knowledge and then you get faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You mentioned one of the other really distinctive signs of Shinto, which is the torii, the beautiful red gates.
Yes.
Can you tell us more about, you know, what we're seeing when we see that and what it means and all that?
So the torii, very simply, generally marks the separation between the secular and the sacred area. And so when you visit a shrine and you come to the first torii gate, you should stop and kind of let your mind have a shift. And then we do a small bow at the torii gate to acknowledge the sacredness within and that we're transitioning from one state of being to another, and that's what the torii are. And then often you'll see hung on the torii gates a rope, which we call a shiminawa, and they'll be hanging from that these folded paper zigzag shapes, which are called shidei. And those shidei represent the spiral of energy between heaven and earth.
Can you tell us more about the Shinto understanding of heaven?
So the word that is often described as heaven is Takama no Hara, which actually means the high plane, which I think is a really lovely metaphor of envisioning this vast plane. And in terms of afterlife, in Shinto, we see that when somebody dies, that they go from the visible world to the unseen world, so that the spirit continues. And the rituals around that, we do 50 days of prayer for the person who has departed. And that prayer is to support the transition of spirit, because you're going from one state of being to another, so there's a transition period. And so the prayers are to say it's okay for you to go, and we hope that you have, you know, happiness in this other life and whatnot. There's a very much a practice of expressing gratitude for ancestors and those who have gone before us, and it is thought that they can see us from the unseen world, even though we cannot see them. So you still have this sense of connection.
Mm. It's really profound, very beautiful too. I like there's so much of the complementarity with, say, within Catholicism, especially of, as you mentioned, communion of saints, and just mm-hmm. understanding lineage that way, and recognizing and honoring the ancestors, and it's really, really beautiful. Let's just shift to talk about forest bathing, because I think that's okay. a really beautiful thing that I think many of us would be very fascinated or really intrigued on partaking of. So just explain what that is and how you do it, who does it with you, what are people looking for? Give us the whole story.
Okay. So forest bathing is, in Japanese, it's called Shinrin-yoku. And the experience of forest bathing is to go into nature and to just be instead of thinking. We think all the time, right? So as a guide, we bring people into the forest where we say that the forest is the therapist and the guide opens the door. So we are trying to hold a space for people to have an experience with nature. And this consists of a series of invitations. So if I have just to give you an example, if I have a group of 10 or 12 people and we'll go to the forest and we're going to sit down immediately. And then I will offer them an invitation that is kind of designed to get them to stop thinking. So we're trying to get you into a sensory relationship with nature and to turn off your brain here for a little bit in terms of your analytical, intellectual self. I'm not going to tell you what tree that is or what flowers these are. It's a very, we want to use our senses. So we're going to then give you a series of invitations as we go through the forest, which are all very quiet with a little bit of sharing, and it may be to notice what is in motion around you. It might be to experience different textures. It might be to introduce yourself to a tree and tell them your story and see what story they tell you. Hmm. It might be to have a deep rest by laying on the ground and notice how your body feels as you connect with the ground, and what do you feel from the ground. And then this is all concluded with we have a kind of a little tea ceremony at the end. So it becomes a liminal experience. We have an initial experience where you're kind of transitioning into this liminal space, which is a threshold, and then you experience all of these things, and then we have to bring you back out again to the daily world. So it's a forest bathing in itself is a secular experience. It's not a religiously led event. So anybody is welcome to participate in it. And in general, people they come out with bigger smiles on their face than when they arrived. It's often becomes an experience of letting go, which is purification in a sense, from my point of view, of laying things down that you don't need, of opening up. Sometimes people can have a very emotional experience, either of letting grief go or experiencing joy, just by getting back into your sensory self versus your thinking self so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be very profound. I often say that it's kind of my side door to Shinto, that people are having, in a sense, a Shinto experience without ever using any of the words or the references to that, because it's very much a feeling of being at one with nature and with the continuum of nature, not just the trees and the rocks, but everything that's going through of nature that you find.
That kind of answers what I was going to ask you, but I'll ask it anyway, just in case there's more. You mentioned that this is kind of this isn't necessarily a religious experience to do forest bathing. And I was going to say, let's say someone's going to get ready to do some forest bathing, or even just to go on a hike or something, just spend some time in nature. What is the difference between just going and doing that in a Shinto way, if I can say it that way? Like what would you bring to those experiences?
I'm going to change your question a little bit.
Sure.
We actually don't do it in a Shinto way.
Okay.
So, in a sense, the way that I do many things is Shinto, but the forest bathing is its own thing. The experience of doing it with a guide versus doing it on your own is very different. And for a couple of reasons. One is it makes a difference when you lay down your burdens, lay down your self-guiding responsibilities, allow yourself to be led. It allows you to be more open to the experience that you're going to have. And the other thing is that forest bathing guide is trained on how to kind of inch you along into this experience. Whereas a lot of people will arrive and they say, oh, I love nature. I go hiking all the time. And, you know, I really enjoy this. But in general, people are going from point A to point B and they're looking along the way. And that's very different than the forest bathing experience, where you are just immersing yourself kind of at point A. So in a 2 to 3 hour guided session, we will go maybe an eighth of a mile.
Yeah, it's not a hike.
It is not a hike. People bring their walking sticks and I'm like, you could just leave those here. We're not going very far. Yeah.
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 So, and you gave us a little bit of this when you were giving us, you know, your background, that, you know, I'm curious in your own spiritual journey. You know, you mentioned how in your earlier stages of life, you were asking like, is this true? And as you discovered Shinto, it was kind of just, oh, this is, you know, the things can just be, and that's very beautiful. But I wondered, you know, as you got deeper and deeper into your Shinto tradition, how your spirituality has continued to change or evolve?
I think we all have different chapters. We have different chapters in our life and in our lives, and such that we then experience things differently at different times. I guess my experience of Shinto personally has changed by, I guess, studying and thinking and writing about it. It's changed by what my life position is, you know, whether when I started this journey, I had very young children, and now I have very young grandchildren. So there have been a lot of different chapters in that and different things that I've done in my life over those years. And so always trying to ask myself, how does my spiritual experience apply to this time in my life, this moment? And, you know, whether I'm in southern Chile or I'm in Canada or I am have, you know, parents who have just died, or I have a friend who's sick, or I have babies being born. Those are all times that I think we, you know, call forth different spiritual experiences for each of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think going back to forest bathing, I very much believe that the forest gives people what they need at that moment. And that's the beauty of doing forest bathing, you know, on a repeated basis, is that through nature you need different things at different times. You know, what you need this week may be different than what you need next week. And certainly as your life progresses and you have different, you know, different decades and different chapters that you're in.
And if you find yourself listening to this, maybe you needed to hear this Shinto message today. It's been really great. You know, speaking of, you know, hearing and listening, that's really what this season has been all about for us, to hear and listen to, you know, other faith traditions. And so I wondered if you could tell us about how you cultivate a posture of listening, and ideally, I think, listening without agenda.
I think just being conscious that we each have our own experience and our own view. And so I can share my views and my experiences, and some of that may be beneficial for you, but other people are different than me, and so I don't expect the same thing to apply to all people. I can offer what's on the table. I try to hold the space for people. You know, this is a Shinto spiritual space, and I hold this space for people. So if they want to step into it, they're welcome. And if they don't want to step into it, that's fine too.
Beautiful. This has really been a really fruitful conversation, and I really would like to go forest bathing.
Me too.
There's forest bathing guides all around. You can just look them up in your area.
Yeah.
Where can people find you, by the way? If people wanted to look you up or your shrine, where can people find?
So
find
our website is Matsuri, MATSURI.CA. And all our contact information is in there. And just one more comment about Matsuri. A lot of times people look up the word Matsuri, which can mean festival. This is a different
writing. Yeah, I was thinking of the Matsuri, Sakura, right?
Cherry blossom festival. This is actually from the verb tate matsuru, which means to make an offering with gratitude. The original kanji was a drawing of two hands holding a branch that they were offering.
Really cool.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us, Anne. It's been wonderful having you.
Yeah, it's been so great.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, John.
Reverend Anne Evans, it's so amazing just hearing these. I don't know. For me, this is like such a different thing. And like John, I'm very interested in doing some forest bathing. I've never encountered that before. But it doesn't sound all that secular to me, honestly. I know she said it was, and that's fine. But I think that we bring meaning to things, and we, you know, look, recognizing the divine and that the hand of creation in everything that we see is just a beautiful thing. And, you know, what better way than something like that to reverence what is all around us. The next guest we have is Reverend Taishi Kato, who is another Shinto priest based in Japan. And the conversation that we had with him was so interesting, but just for the listenability of the episode, we just kept one portion of our much longer interview with him, where he explains for us the importance of keeping the grounds of the shrine, the Shinto shrine, clean and pure. Today we are joined by Taishi Kato. Taishi Kato is a Shinto priest at Hattori Tenjinju Shrine. Kato was born as the eldest son of a multi-generational family serving their 1,000-year-old Shinto shrine. Kato graduated with a Master of Arts in Religions of Asia and Africa at the School of Oriental and African Studies from the University of London. Kato is committed to introducing Shinto to people all around the world. He participated in the Religions for Peace 10th World Assembly as the representative of Shinto. Kato and two American collaborators produced an illustrated book of Shinto moments to show how religion resonates with the shared human experience. Kato represented Japanese religious leaders at the G20 Religion Summit in Indonesia 2022. Kato published a book in 2023 titled The COVID Pandemic and the World's Religions, which discusses this current state of world religions in the COVID pandemic. Taishi Kato, welcome to Religion to Reality. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
How many people come to the temple? Like, what does that look like? Like, how are your days structured? Or, like, how many services take place? Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people on this call are familiar with, say, Catholicism, where people gather on Sunday morning, and that's mm-hmm. the weekend is the really busy time. But, I mean, the role that you have, which is so much being in the community, too, how often and frequently do people come to the temple?
Well, to be honest, maybe 70% or 80% of Japanese people visit Shinto shrine on New Year's Day.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a culture. Like, even though they cannot identify this is Shinto shrine or mm-hmm. like this is temple, but they just like visit Shinto shrine for like as a culture. And but like on the other hand, like some people visit Shinto shrine in the morning, like before going to the like work, they visit Shinto shrine. And my routine work is not just like offering prayer, but also like keep cleaning the shrine grounds. So because we have there's a concept of like purity in Shinto. This is a very important idea in Shinto. And then, so we have like deities prefer to be in a state of like clean place. So that's why this, like the most important practice for Shinto priests is to keep cleaning grounds. Yeah.
Hmm. Could you explain a little bit more about that? Like, what does that practically look like?
Well, so for instance, like there's a lot of like big trees inside Shinto shrine, like even like 300 or 400 years, and there are a lot of like leaves, how can I say, coming off, and then. Mm-hmm. We have to clean that kind of like leaves, and then how can I say, it's more really easy to cut down the trees if economically, like, but keeping clean the grounds and then pick up the leaves makes like Shinto priests having the chance to make a communication with nature and visitors.
Mm. I see.
I mean, during like keeping cleaning, there are a lot of like visitors say, oh, thank you so much for cleaning these grounds. Mm. And they can identify the reason why Shinto shrine is located like for 1,000 years, because like some or like even ancestors get involved in these activities. So keeping cleanings, we can feel like showing respect of nature. It's very related to this activity. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think cleaning is very important practice for Shinto priest.
I like what you said. You know, it would be, in some ways, it would be easier to just chop down all the trees, but that's kind of like taking a shortcut in the spiritual journey or something. There are mm-hmm. no shortcuts in the spiritual journey, because it's about it's not about the destination so much as the journey itself, right?
You, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so by leaving the trees and having the leaves fall and raking the leaves, you're committing to the ongoing practice. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a seasonality to it, right? The leaves are not falling all yes. year. So there's something that's different about, you know, the fall or mm-hmm. something. Sorry that cut off so quickly, but we just wanted to grab that topic of the conversation. And I think it's really beautiful. It helps us to understand why you even would have a shrine if nature is the big idea. You know, I was thinking about like, well, if it's all about nature, you know, why aren't we? Yeah, I kind of made me think of, I don't know, indigenous peoples in America and how they kind of lived off the land, respected the land, had very impermanent structures many times. But understanding more of what it means to keep something purified helps us understand why it might exist in the first place among nature. So I really appreciate both Reverend Ann Evans and Reverend Taishi Kato. I'm stuck thinking about what each of our traditions prepares us for. Catholicism is pretty wide-ranging when it comes to preparing us to make moral decisions, for example. But what about preparing us to just do something like enjoy a hike? Seems like Shinto has a lot more to say and a deeper experience for us to have when it comes to appreciating nature. Our next episode is going to be with Elizabeth Schrader Pulitzer, who's going to talk to us about her scholarly work with the Gospel of John and Mary Magdalene. It's a very interesting conversation. It's kind of unique in this arc that we've kind of been building for this season, but I still think it's a really great episode and I look forward to sharing it with you. Religion to Reality is a podcast, of course, that you're listening to, but not just a podcast. It's also an interfaith monthly gathering that we do online for free. You can head to our Substack to find out more about that. So the Substack is religiontoreality.substack.com. And there you'll find the sign up for the monthly gathering, which happens every first Wednesday of the month. Religion to Reality was created and is executive produced by me, Dave Plisky, and is produced and edited by Nick Stropoli and Connor Gonnelly. You can find the show notes and other resources at religiontoreality.org. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.